Back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
And joining me right now on the HR&P guest line, you used to hear him here on 1560 back in the day. You used to see him on Channel 13. He is now at TexAgs, the one and only David Nuño. David, it's been way too long. Good to hear from you, man.
Pablo Galante, what's up, buddy? How you been?
I am doing very well. Now, I wonder how you are doing, because you had quite the long Thanksgiving weekend. I took off on a plane on Saturday night coming back from Tampa Bay, thinking that the next head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies was going to be Mark Stoops. I got off the plane. It's not Mark Stoops. All sorts of things had happened in between that. It seemed like there was a revolt by fans, by players, and now Mike Elko is the head coach introduced yesterday of the Aggies. How did we get here?
Well, a couple things. I don't think the insurrection that occurred on Saturday night, and that's what it felt like, is the complete reason Mark Stoops is not here. But it certainly played a part in it. Look, I think the biggest reason fans and, you know, insiders were kind of disappointed in the potential hiring of Mark Stoops. Look, Mark Stoops is a good coach, and with A&M's resources, he might win, right? This is not necessarily an indictment on him per se, but I feel like he represents old-school football. And there's nothing wrong with old-school football, but we just had old-school football with Jimbo Fisher. We had a guy in his mid-50s who was getting you 8-4, 7-5, 5-7. And, you know, with an offense that was archaic, and you're replacing him with a guy whose offense hasn't been that good the last couple years, and it kind of represents that old school. When there's a coaching change, and let's remember the days from the Texans, from Gary to Bill O'Brien to whatever, you want kind of a different feel to obviously D'Amico now, who is filling all those needs. You want somebody to be different than what you just had, and it felt like Mark Stoops was similar in at least the approach of being an older style of football. Now, you could say, well, Mike Elko is a disciple of Jimbo Fisher. Isn't he the same thing? And I would say no. Not only he also worked under Brian Kelly. The thing is with Coach Elko, he's younger than I am. He's 46 years old. He may look a little older, but that guy is still a young guy. He's definitely adapted with the game. He's a guy that I remember when I first got to TexAgs back in 2021, people were like, this dude's going to be a head coach. And what he did at Duke with those resources, they recruited around 60th in the country, right? And they were super competitive in the ACC in a year where the ACC had a really good year, and the SEC for the most part was down. For the most part, right? Not all across, but for the most part. What he's been able to do there, and this year they lost a bunch of one-score games with their backup quarterback. It just feels right. Mark Stoops didn't feel right to me, but, you know, I would have been intrigued by it, but he's not the guy that I wanted. Fans wanted to hold out hope for Kalen DeBoer or Ryan Day, but this guy just makes sense. He knows the players. He knows the area. He knows how to recruit. He already said the right things in the press conference yesterday, endearing himself to the Texas high school coaches. It just feels right. It's coming back and with a bigger platform, and I think he's going to do wonderful here.
David Nuño of TexAgs with me on the HR&P guest line. That's a much better explanation than I could think of the difference between Stoops and Elko, because to me, outside looking in, I didn't really see that much of one, but the idea of old school versus new school, okay, I can get behind that. I do wonder, though, how much of this hiring process, how much of it was also focusing on trying to keep as many players from transferring away as possible, because this was a guy who was at A&M fairly recently.
I'm sure that plays a part, absolutely, right? When you got a guy that, I mean, look at the outpouring of support that he got from current players and former players, right? This guy is beloved in this community. And look, A&M has not hired a defensive-minded head coach since R.C. Slocum. So we're talking about a lot of offensive guys who have failed at A&M. They may have had moments of brilliance, but they have failed. Francione failed. Mike Sherman did not live up to what they wanted him to be. Kevin Sumlin, flash, couple great years. Then they fizzled in November after that. Jimbo Fisher had a great 2020. So they're going back to their core. But the main thing is, yeah, in today's college football world, you would like to keep your core group together. But you need to keep the right core group. Jimbo Fisher was an incredible, incredible recruiter. And I really thought it was going to work. And it probably could have worked had he figured out the offensive line. But he's a little too stubborn, man. I don't think he had the strongest staff at times. And certain areas were strong. Mike Elko was certainly a strong personality to have on that staff a couple years back. But he did not have the strongest staff. The offensive line was decimated. And you can't recruit at the level A&M was recruiting at and have an offensive line or blocking in general that didn't protect your quarterbacks. Five starting quarterbacks lost their seasons in the last 3 years. Like, they lost Haynes King twice. They lost Max Johnson twice. And by the way, they lost Connor Wigman, the future. So all that being said, you can't have that, and that to me was the demise of Jimbo Fisher. Plus, he didn't involve with the game.
There is a part of me that wonders if Jimbo Fisher would still be around if Connor Wegman hadn't been hurt. And it was interesting to see the rapidness with which Texas A&M moved on from him. I know they've been getting a lot of crap, David, and I imagine seeing that, you do want to defend them. But I actually think that they deserve some credit for having the cojones to pull out the wall and say, F it. We're just going to get rid of him. But on the other side of things, there's a part of me that comes away from this weekend looking at athletic director Ross Bjork and wondering why he's still around. Because it doesn't really feel like this weekend it was very clean with the way that they did it. And it does seem that he did want to bring Mark Stoops in over anybody else.
Well, let's play this out, because I understand that. That's a very popular thought. But do you not give him credit for what he's done with basketball? He didn't hire Buzz Wade, but he did hire Joni Taylor to be the women's basketball coach, up-and-comer. Jim Schlossnagel took them to a College World Series. This was a Ross Bjork hire. Trisha Ford on the softball side seems to be awesome. Jamie Morrison got them back into the tournament. He's a Ross Bjork hire. Brian Corton, men's golf. Like, I'm doing a lot of name-dropping. For your audience that may not know what I'm talking about, but he has done an excellent job outside of football. And by the way, Jimbo Fisher hired him. He was not the athletic director when Jimbo Fisher was hired. So I know Saturday night didn't play well, but here's part of the story too. How about just really good reporting is why we know everything that happened. You know, Billy Lucci, who's our owner and obviously the face of Texas. If we didn't have all the information he was reporting, we wouldn't have known that Mark Stoops was going to come out there. And I know the good folks at KSR in Kentucky had that story as well. But, like, really good reporting is why these kind of things do happen. And we found out that he wanted to go with Mark Stoops. All right, well, if that's what he wanted to go with, and then the insurrection with the fans and also the Board of Regents and then him actually asking questions and then maybe Mark Stoops getting a little bit of cold feet after seeing his response, they ended up at the right spot. So, however you got there, if you think that one night is the reason for firing him, I don't see it that way right now. I think they got the right guy. And by the way, can we give him a little credit on that contract? Because that contract is going to be the new wave of college football. It is an incentive-based contract. That's exactly what they did to where you have to – like Jimbo Fisher was paid at A&M like he won a national championship at Florida State, not at Texas A&M. For Mike Elko to be paid the way that Jimbo Fisher was, he's going to have to prove it. And that's why he gets these add-ons, $1 million for making the college football playoffs, $1.5 million to the quarterfinals, another $2 million for advancing to the semifinals, advance to the college football championship game, $2.5 million. If he wins it all, and an additional $3.5 million. That is, to me, one of the brilliance of this whole deal. He's laid it out there. He said, this is what we're going to do. And then a coach did agree to it.
David Nuño of TexAgs with me talking about the hiring of Mike Elko as the next head coach of Texas A&M football. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. To go back to the reporting you were talking about, how close were they to making Mark Stoops the guy? Were they at the 1 yard line, or was this maybe a little bit further off? Because what I heard you say a little bit ago is that Bjork was interested in Mark Stoops. Was it maybe not as close as we all thought it may have been on Saturday night?
I think there was. I think it was at the 1 yard line. I do, but I'm going to tell you right now, like Mike Elko was always, if not 1A, 1B throughout this entire process. So you would hear names like Kalen DeBoer. Well, if Washington loses this weekend, you know, they're going to make a real pitch to Kalen DeBoer. If Ohio State loses to Michigan, which they ended up doing, maybe they'll make a pitch to Ryan Day. So there's these big names that were out there that were super intriguing. I do know that it was very important for Ross to get a defensive-minded head coach with a blue-collar mentality. And by the way, I understand like people who think Elko and Stoops are very similar, and they are because they're both defensive-minded people. And I heard a Kentucky radio station yesterday say, yeah, Elko is very similar to Stoops, except he hasn't accomplished what Stoops has.
That's what I
and
thought.
That's true. But what is Mike Elko doing at Duke, right? Like, we're talking again, and by the way, Stoops did that with Kentucky. But Stoops did that at Kentucky, and let's be very honest, the down division in the SEC, right? For the last few years, like, is Georgia and who else? Like, Missouri had an amazing year this year. They're in the mix. Tennessee had a good year last year. This year, they were okay. But you get Vandy every year? Come on. You know, like, Florida's been down the last few years. Like, they're... So I guess my point is, I think Mark Stoops would have worked at Texas A&M. But now let's talk about fit and feel, right? And then it goes back to that first question you asked me, which was, you know, how much did the players, you know, buying in play a part? It should play a part, right? Like, again, not that fans should decide who the head coach is, but look at the reception that D'Amico Ryans got from the Texans fans. And that's without any of us knowing what kind of head coach he would be. That's with a limited, as a defensive coordinator with the 49ers. We just love that dude. Sometimes the right answer is right in front of you. D'Amico Ryans was the right answer. And look at the change in the culture and the optimism and the hope of the Texans. Well, A&M is hoping and banking on Mike Elko gives you those same kind of feels. Different history at A&M than D'Amico had. But if you see my point, there's everybody who's come around Mike Elko is all in. And if you saw that press conference yesterday, you're like, this guy gets it. He's blue collar, and I think he's not about the flash and the substance. He's about the work. Again, at the end of the day, it's about results. So I'm sick of talking about the what ifs. And I said that going into this year. I don't know how A&M's going to be. I think they got talent to win 9 or 10 games, but it's about what if. And I don't want to play what if. I want results. And I think Mike Elko's about that life.
David, I have one last question for you. It's been a while since the Aggies have been more than an 8-win program. As Ross Bjork said, this program is more than an 8-win program. It's been since I moved here, which is in 2011. I moved here right before the last game between Texas and Texas A&M, which thankfully that is back. It's going to be next November 30th. There have been the 11-2 season and 9-4 seasons with Manziel, 9-4 in 18, 9-1 in 2020. So the results don't indicate that of late, but we have seen in the past, obviously, that this program, at least in the Big 12, was capable of reaching pretty big heights, especially in the early 90s and into like 1998 or so. What are the realistic expectations? Obviously, people are going to make fun of what the Aggies are looking for. Listen, every program should be shooting for as many wins as possible. You should never settle. But what are the expectations going forward now that Elko's aboard? Because with Jimbo, they were at a height because of what he was getting paid that probably was never going to be reached just because of all the pressure that you put on a guy when you pay him that much.
Well, I'm going to answer this a couple different ways. I find it humorous that people get upset with expectations. Like, oh, how dare A&M think that they can win 10 games? They're 8-4. The Astros, for a long time, weren't doing anything. Right? The Texas Rangers this year came into the season as a team that had never done it. Why are they spending all this money? And they won the World Series. Look, they haven't proven it enough. There's no doubt about that. But they have the facilities. They have the resources. They have the passion. They definitely have the fans, right? I mean, you had 104,000 people there from Mississippi State, two really bad teams going at it. Like, come on, guys. Like, this is a different place, right? So I say that to you in that it's hard to tell you what my expectations are for Mike Elko because I don't know who's in, who's out, right? This new world of transfer portal. I do think A&M should aspire to be and can be and should have been with Jimbo Fisher, a team that every year flirts with 9 or 10 wins. That's who they should be. They have not been. And, you know, we want to compare ourselves. No, we don't. People like to compare how Texas is doing this year. Texas is doing fantastic, and I think their victory against Alabama should be applauded. But Texas has also had some bad years over the last decade, right? Like, it is hard to get it right. And, oh, by the way, that was in the Big 12, where, I'm sorry, it's not the same level of competition. This year you may be able to make the argument about the SEC having some really down teams. So I'm saying all that and saying they should aspire to be 9 or 10 wins every year, right? That's what they should be. Just like Georgia for a long time did not break through, right? And then when they finally broke through, everyone's like, look at here. Same with Clemson, right? So A&M should aspire for the 9 or 10 wins every single year. And I love that that's where they're going. And if you can fire a coach who, by the way, hasn't won a road game in 10, or I guess he wasn't here for the last one, but basically hadn't won a road game since the Missouri game in 2021, which is the week after they beat Alabama 41-38. Like you move on from that. And people can laugh at all the money. Oregon, for a long time, was throwing money with no splash. So my point is, there should be high expectations because of the resources, because of the talent that you can recruit here. Now they just got to go do it. So can I tell you what their record's going to be next year today? No, I can't. But if they keep Connor Wigman and they learn how to freaking block, they do those two things, I think they're going to be pretty darn good, especially with the schedule that they have next year. They open up with Notre Dame. They've got Texas at home. It's not going to be a cakewalk by any stretch, but I think they can be a 9 or 10 win team. But they got to figure out the freaking offensive line. They cannot let quarterbacks get hurt, and that's what they've done for three straight seasons.
That's David Nuno. You can catch all his great work at TexAgs. David, great to catch up, man. Let's do it again soon.
Let's do it, man. Thanks again for having me, Paul.
And
by the way, let's not forget, like 15 years ago, I said you were going to be a star, man. You're doing great.
Thank you. I personally feel like I could be doing better. I could be doing a little better.
Yeah, we all can. Yeah,
appreciate you, dude. That is David Nuno. Always been a big fan of him. Remember his days back with 1560. Up next, garbage time.